Hello, welcome to the Working Parent Podcast. I'm Sharon Charlton-Thompson. This podcast series is designed to support and resource you during this period of COVID-19 and beyond. We hope to keep it as simple and as helpful as possible. There are many more resources on our website, theworkingparentcompany.co.uk, and follow us on LinkedIn for daily updates, The Working Parent Company. Today, I'm talking to a really important member of our team, Dr. Nahara Kreis. We are so lucky to have her. And we're digging in a little bit deeper into the subject of resilience for working parents at this time. I hope you enjoy. Okay, so today we are delighted to welcome Dr. Nahara Kreis to our podcast. Nahara is a really important part of the Working Parent Company team and has been working with us now for about 9 to 10 years, something like that, I think, probably. And she's one of our really sought after expert speakers. Nahara, I was reminding myself of your biography. I mean, my goodness, a highly experienced consultant clinical psychologist and a lecturer in adolescent and adult mental health. I know you're a member of the group that is policy for the British Psychological Society, and that you have spoken at the all-party parliamentary group on behalf of the British Psychological Society, and that you've been involved in countless productions and media, like with the BBC and different TV channels, and that you're the CEO and founder of STEM4, which is a teenage mental health charity, and a creator of a particular wellbeing program for schools. So I feel I couldn't be in any better hands to start to explore the subject of resilience at this time. So thank you for joining us. The theme we wanted to cover at this time of lockdown and beyond, and this extraordinary situation we're all finding ourselves in, is how do working parents both maintain and continue to build resilience at this time? Probably the same as you, you know, at the start of lockdown, I really noticed a sort of survival mindset that so many had, myself included, when the adrenaline was surging and, you know, Mother Nature does its bit and we all sort of get ready to survive during crisis. And now that seems to have given way to something else. And my feeling is that a more sustainable approach at this time is going to be needed. And for that, certainly for myself, I know that I'm going to need resilience to approach this in the long term. Now, one of the problems I have with resilience and all the stuff I've done on resilience in my career is that resilience is often thought of as a sort of armor up to survive strategy, or a sort of, you know, the British cultural keep calm and carry on with bells on sort of thing. But I know it's so much more than that. So as we enter, what is this, week 5, week 6, probably more for some people of lockdown, and are searching for something more sustainable to resource us, can you give us your thoughts on what resilience actually is?
So resilience is actually a very complex concept. And I guess as an overarching definition, I would say that it's about the ability to adapt to the challenges that you face in life, but the extreme challenges. And it's a kind of mixture of things. It's about being able to learn from failure, about learning to be flexible and accommodating for change, and having a whole variety of strategies that you can put into action. So when we talk about resilience, we're not talking about one thing. We're talking about a number of different ways in which we can kind of deal with challenges. And it's a very interactive process. And talking about your terminology, Sharon, so, you know, about armor and about, you know, bracing tight almost for an attack, I think one of the things we need to think a little bit about is that resilience has a variety of differing degrees. So people will say that, you know, resilience is about survival, and others might say it's actually about coping. And the third group would say, well, no, it kind of lies on this spectrum of thriving in some sense. And I suppose what we have to do is to say, you know, if you are surviving, or, you know, are you sort of just carrying on countless, or are you grinning and bearing it, or, you know, being stoic in some sense, that isn't about not being resilient, but it's actually not really helping you to adapt and to cope, which is a much better place to be at. And of course, if you can thrive based on the learning that you get, then that is really and truly being robustly resilient.
That's incredible. I mean, knowing for a start that we can break it down into a series of helpful strategies, that I guess we will all have our individual helpful strategies that help us, is really important. And also, I noticed that you use the adapt word, and that for me, when I think of my own resilience, and as a person who hasn't in her history been great at adapting to change, and having really to learn that as I've matured and grown up, then that, you know, that sort of how we meet, the quality of how we meet this situation and how we are able to adapt to it seems really important. I'm also struck, I mean, one of the things that I think both you and I share in our day jobs is that we have the huge privilege of sitting with people and hearing their experiences day in, day out. And there's something very humbling about that at the moment. And I'm reminded every single day how remarkable working parents are. Exactly how much they are able to contribute, even at this time, is absolutely incredible. I'm also struck by how individual this is for everybody. Mm-hmm. So whilst there's, you know, a lot of collective narrative, a lot of noise in the collective that can be quite anxiety provoking for people, that behind closed doors, everybody is having to find their own way to meet this and to adapt to it. I've been talking to single parents, you know, how on earth do they manage at this time, to step parents where there's vulnerability about children going from one home to another, parents with children with additional needs, the homeschooling, obviously, which is affecting so many people, and parents with young infants and babies that, you know, you don't have the, what I think of as a luxury, that my two children, you know, I can leave them to themselves, to their own devices for periods of time, you know, age 12 and 15. And also then parents that are now furloughed and all the stuff that that brings up. So I've never been so struck by how individual this is for everybody and how much stretch working parents are having to cope with at the moment, given the amount of additional roles that everybody is taking on. You know, I'm also now teacher, I'm not just coach, I'm not just therapist, I'm also now a homeschooler. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on what are some of the messages and strategies that you're hearing from your client group or that you know of that can be particularly effective at this time.
So I think the first thing to keep in mind is that when things change, and particularly when they change suddenly, so for all of us, the whole COVID-19 situation has been, you know, it's just burst upon us with very little preparation for something. So when we are faced with very sudden change, we tend to go into a state of shock. And when we go into a state of shock, we react in a crisis fashion, and crisis brings in us some of the best of ourselves, so we'll probably highlight some of the worst of ourselves. You know, it is just how it is. We sort of go to almost our factory settings when something like this happens. So I completely agree with you about the versatility and the strength that is within all of the many, many, many different, you know, combinations and permutations of parents who are out there. And I think for most, that the best of their strengths will tend to just almost automatically surface. But I do think that what will be really helpful is to start to also try and appraise a bit of the impact of the situation. So I think step number one in any crisis situation that brings about resilience is to focus on safety. It's one of our core basic needs. And if we are able to make ourselves and our families and those around us feel safe, then that will be step one in terms of building resilience. And you can do that in a number of different ways, and I'm sure you would do that automatically. So, for example, you know, being able to exude that warmth, being able to be responsive to often what might be a big crisis reaction around you as best you can, whilst you might be having your own inner crisis, being able to create harmony and think about what that might be like, being able to spend time and just, you know, just not doing time and not all that sort of self-enhancing time that, you know, we are all being called upon to do, but just you time, you know, you and them time, and also kind of me time for yourself. And then all of that good stuff that parents all know anyway, but, you know, creating safety through providing structure. And I think my word of warning in terms of resilience there would be to not try and create or recreate the same structure that we have at the moment, but to be able to adapt that a little. So if it is that, you know, sleep time varies, then go with it rather than get too upset about it, but make sure that that's there. And at the same time, that kind of important idea of also holding on to boundaries, because boundaries make all of us feel safe. But again, it might be that you've got to revisit and look at some of those boundaries. So if you had, let's say, a kind of boundary around online use for yourself and for your family, it might be that needs to be met, that has to be rearranged a little bit. So again, you picked up on my word of adapting, but flexibility is the bit, I think, that is also going to be really, really important. And for some of us, being flexible is a little easier than others. So knowing yourself and being able to say, what is my anxiety reaction? What is my stress reaction when I go into crisis? Do I become even more fixed in terms of the way I behave, the way I think? And maybe that's one of the things that's not going to help me to be resilient in this situation. Perhaps I need to start to think about an alternative. Maybe I need to consult with people around me and look at how I might be a bit more flexible. Mm-hmm. And start to make some plans that will fit in. I break down being resilient or having a resilient strategy into three different sections. So first of all, you can be resilient prospectively. So what can you do in order to develop something that's going to lead you into the here, but also beyond? You also need to start to think about how you kind of be resilient concurrently with what's happening at the moment. And I think for most parents, for most of us, that's what we're doing at the moment. We've been faced with enormous change. We're going, right, okay, help. How do I do this? How do I do that? How do I take on my multiple roles? But you've also got to plan to be able to fulfill those now and beyond. And also might be want to look retrospectively at something and kind of go, what have we learned from that? And how might we also develop and add to our resilience toolkit in that particular way.
I love that. Thank you. I mean, already, just when you started speaking and you talked about safety, I could feel my shoulders drop. And I don't say that lightly, but one of the things I really noticed early on was all that sort of safety that as parents we provide to our children, like you say, with warmth and attunement and harmony and spending time and things like that. I noticed naturally that I wanted to do more of that with my kids in the early stages. And I also noticed that I needed more of that. Under stress, there was a quality of being seen and heard and understood that I needed to help my own sort of emotional regulation. One very silly story, but I'll just throw it in there, is one thing I noticed was I love Killing Eve. You know, I'm addicted to that show. And of course, the third series or whatever is out now and I've been watching it. So I in series one and two, absolutely loved it, slept no problem. I watched the first episode of Killing Eve, whenever it was out last week or the week before, and I couldn't sleep that night. And that told me that my nervous system must already be heightened. And like I say, silly example, but Villanelle tipped me over the edge. So I couldn't rest in my body that night, whereas normally that kind of thing wouldn't faze me. So I'm really noticing that not only am I wanting to provide harmony and warmth to my children and my family, but I'm also needing more of that myself at the moment.
Yes, and I think that's the thing. I think sometimes when we go into crisis, we feel as though we've got to come up with all sorts of clever systems. And I think fundamentally, you know, it's just going back to saying, how do we all gather together and how do we keep safe? And once we can do that, then we can start to put into action, I think, some of these other things that perhaps I'll go on to describe, which will kind of make part of your resilience toolkit. Mm-hmm. So some of those would be, first of all, I think, starting to think a little bit about your strengths and your limitations. So don't be afraid to be able to say, I can't do all of that. You know, you mentioned about having to be entertainer, cook, chef, school teacher, etc. And we're all being called to overstretch ourselves into these roles. But have a think about what your strengths might be, but also your limitations. You know, if you don't have within you either the patience or even the knowledge of teaching quadratics to your children, don't try to do it. First of all, take stock of your strengths, think about your limitations. I think now is really the time to dig deep and think about both your self beliefs and your other beliefs. So, you know, trust in yourself to be able to get through things, and trust in others to be able to also work with you, to be able to support you in that. And that also means being able to think about what you do as self-care, and also about noticing when you're not being able to do that and taking steps to do that. And also about then, you know, I think all of us as parents overstretch ourselves into other care. We want to make the best for our children. We want to make the best for our partners. But actually, we also need to balance that with ourselves. So that would be the other thing to try and do. Think a little bit about, you know, your attitude. Are you generally positive or negative? Because again, as I mentioned at the beginning, when we go into shock, when we go into crises, all of those bits of ourselves will kind of be attenuated in some way. So if you're generally positive, you might sort of slightly go into denial and be over positive and then be very disappointed when you can't do that. But similarly, if you're more negative, then you might find yourself becoming overly pessimistic and anxious about what it means. So explore your mindset and try and see whether you might be able to challenge that by having a bit more of a balance. I am really one about talking a little bit about kind of looking for support systems yourself. So I think one of the things that happens in a crisis again is that people step into enormously heroic roles, you know, and I think it's very easy to go from hero to zero, as they say, by, you know, going into burnout. And I think we are even more vulnerable to burnout working at home than we are working in an office, where there are those clear boundaries and we have got clear work roles and we have boundaries that keep us there. So I think, again, think a little bit about yourself, because you might go, oh, no, I kind of deal with stress well. You know, my stress bucket is really big. I can take it on board. I'm strong. And actually, you will, you know, so you need to start to notice that self. I think a little bit about your problem coping style. You know, are you a bit of an avoider? Or do you sort of go into, you know, do you go into full battle mode? Or are you a little bit passive in your coping? So I'll try and think a little bit about that. And I also say roll with resistance. So if things are not working out the way you want to, just go with it rather than fighting with it. And I'd say choose your battle. So if you've got really a kind of a difficult, I don't know, a teen or whatever might be happening, you may just want to drop the fact they're not tidying up their bedroom at this time and focus on something else that might work better for you.
Yeah, I mean, again, there's so much there. One of the things as you're speaking that comes to mind, I sort of hope my teenage daughter doesn't listen to this. I'm sure she won't. But boundaries are such a fundamental part of us feeling safe and sure and certain. And trying to keep to our boundaries at this time when the boundary in home and work has completely disappeared. And I can really understand that, therefore, we could be more susceptible to burnout and to overwork at this time because we're working from home. And so we haven't got those natural boundaries of the junction between work and home that's often there. Even for those people that have always worked long hours, still that boundary has been blurred. And then I was also thinking of that with my teenage daughter. And this is, for this, I want some sort of smug mummy point, because it occurred to me in the first couple of weeks, we were trying to keep the kids to sort of getting up at normal school times. And everything at that time was about keeping to routines. And I was in my crisis mode and, you know, not really seeing the wood for the trees. And so, okay, everybody's still got to get up at 8 o'clock. Everybody's still got to all this kind of stuff. And then over the Easter holidays, it occurred to me that actually my teen in particular is getting incredibly tired. Mm. And I reminded myself, or I was reminded of, actually, the sort of circadian rhythms of teenagers, and that they rarely get that opportunity to go with their natural rhythm. So this is my smug mummy moment of lockdown, when I noticed that I could let my daughter go to bed later when her melatonin is naturally kicking in and wake up later. And as a result, I have a much happier teenager in the house. Yeah. So that is maybe that's spotting a strength in me. I don't know. It's certainly spotting a strength in her. But that's one of the boundaries that I had to be flexible about. And I think in that sort of survival mindset that you talk of, that those first weeks when we meet a crisis, there can be a sort of rigidity that comes into that. And the other thing that occurred to me listening to you, which I thought was really spoke to a lot of what I'm hearing at the moment, is spotting our strengths and really noticing how our strengths show themselves at this time, because they will and they do. I'm seeing that in every client I'm working with, and I'm experiencing it in myself. But also being mindful of that critical point when we overuse our strengths, they become our poison. And what I notice in myself, I can only use myself as the example here, but I'm very willing to be vulnerable and put myself out there. What I notice in myself is that when I'm under stress, I become an over-functioner, not an under-functioner. Yeah. And so I, you know, my foot goes even harder on the pedal. Mm. And the things that are my normal coping strategies aren't there for me so much at the moment, because I would normally reach out to friends and, you know, go out in the evenings and the cinema and get a wider perspective on things. I can't do those things. And I don't have the bandwidth in the evening to then jump onto yet another Zoom call to socialize with friends when I can't Zoom all day. So I'm having to think creatively about what strategies I have to build my resilience at this time and to seek that support that you talk about. Some of the things I would normally rely on aren't there.
Yes, no, I completely agree. And I think part of it, isn't it, is that there is a sort of fatigue that comes by a sort of collapse of context, because at the moment we are using the same space for everything. You know, we are working, we've got our friends, we've got shopping, we've got dating, you know, everything is online in the same place. And so it's very easy, therefore, to not want to kind of do any of those other connecting things, you know, and things that we would relax. For example, if you relax watching TV, you know, even that's now looking at something else online. And although it's quite different watching TV, because you can, you know, you can zoom out and zoom in, so to speak, still nevertheless very, very difficult. So I think in terms of managing stress, what I would probably say is to start to become very aware. So Sharon, you are very aware of how it affects you. You go into overdrive. And I think a number of people would relate to that. And I think it's about starting to notice when those signs aren't being so helpful for you. So often people with stress will react in three different ways. Either they go into overdrive and they kind of slightly crash and burn as a result, or they have a very slow burn where they keep their tension levels up all the time, and that will then impact on their sleep and all of that kind of functioning. And for others, it will be almost like a procrastination, sort of stepping out of it, because the stress and the anxiety is so difficult to deal with. So what I would probably say is, firstly, try and think and be honest about your style, and then start to identify what those early signs and symptoms might be for you. And I'd say look at those in four different dimensions. So first of all, start to think about physically what signs you might be picking up. So what is your sleep like, you know, and do the things that normally, you know, kind of work for you, not work. So I am also a huge Killing Eve fan. And I think just the increased tension on top of what's already a lot of adrenaline just doesn't help you to go to sleep at night. So think about sleeping, think about whether your eating patterns have changed. And again, if you're working from home, it's very easy to sort of have a continuous snacking that might go on, or in fact, you know, just not eat or overeat. What's happening with drinking? I think there's a number of people who have started to, you know, think, oh, well, I can. So start to think a little bit about your physical symptoms. Start to think a little bit about your mood. Have you become more irritable than you usually would do? Is your fuse short? Are you becoming a bit more tearful? Are you a bit more jumpy? And start to think a little bit about your behaviors. Are you working excessively? Are you delaying stuff? And also in terms of your relationships, have you become over-reliant? Or actually, are you a little bit kind of like, leave me, I don't want anybody. I want my own space and I don't want to rely on you. So if those are your changes that you're noticing, then see those as your sort of pink flags that are going up to say that actually you're not functioning at your best.
Absolutely. One of the things I'm reflecting on as I'm hearing you speak is that whole notion of self-care. Mm. I think in our culture, self-care is so misconstrued. It's like, who is this self and how do I care for it? But yet self-care has become a sort of Instagram hashtag and a bit of a cliche. And, you know, we scream self-care at people and at ourselves in a culture that often doesn't support self-care, particularly workplace cultures. And so what happens to self-care is it becomes something, another thing to beat ourselves up about. We know we should be doing it. Perhaps we want to do it, but it's the last thing that happens, particularly for parents, I think, when, as you said earlier, we often are so other-directed as parents. We're not particularly self-directed. It seems like there is no greater need for self-care at the moment. And I know myself, I mean, my clients will know this. I've had a long, very long-term meditation practice myself, and I rely on it heavily for my own emotional health and emotional regulation. But I know that's not the only way, of course, to practice self-care. And I just wonder, you know, self-care often gets put into the box of we know what to do, but we don't do it until we hit crisis point and then we have to do it, or we have to take to our beds because we've got ill or something. So what are the small things, do you think, that we can bring in around self-care at the moment? Or is it not about that? Is it that we fundamentally have to change our relationship to self-care in order to boost our resilience?
I think there's two ways to look at it, actually. And I think that the first is that, you know, self-care is about giving yourself a little bit of time, really. One of the big things that's happened with the whole lockdown and COVID-19 is that we have been denied our moments of pleasure. You know, everything has become very functional. And part of self-care, if you really think about it, you know, we will be motivated to carry out self-care if we enjoy it, if there is a benefit to it, if we're passionate about it. And that's the bit, I think, that isn't happening at the moment. It's very difficult to have downtime. It's very difficult to have moments of pleasure. It's very difficult to relax. And so I'd say, for you, anyone, self-care is about what works for you. You know, if it's about listening to some music, if it's about reading a couple of pages on your book, if it's going and playing a funny game with your children, if it is about, I don't know, going out in the garden and digging out the weeds, you know, I think it's just about giving something to yourself that is completely non-evaluated, non-performance-based, you know, not marked, not ranked. It's just purely something that helps you to feel relaxed and good about yourself. So in that sense, you know, you don't need to say, oh, I've got to spend 20 minutes a day doing self-care. It could be something that you do in a moment, you know, just taking a few moments out to do it. Your second question, which is also very interesting, is about, do we actually have to change our whole belief and concept around self-care? And I think that also needs to happen in tandem. So apart from grabbing moments and making it work for us, I do think we have to start to see the balance between you know, looking after others and performing and actually being able to invest in ourselves. Because if we look at the whole area of mental health, there's so much we can do from a prevention point of view if we can start to give ourselves some good foundations in terms of, you know, not being so stressed, not being so overworked. So I think if we can also just take carve out some time, which is sort of non-negotiable, you know, but it is our time to look after ourselves and to, you know, do whatever, you know, it could be a passion project of some sort, but just do it because it's for you. I think that would be really good.
I love that. I love the passion project. So what as I'm listening to you speak, I'm thinking self-care, you know, as I think about the weekend coming, and weekends have a different meaning at the moment, I'm sure, you know, I'm longing for the weekends, you know, they have a simplicity, and touch wood, if we're not having to deal with the real suffering of COVID-19, then we have a simplicity and a calm to our weekends, possibly at the moment, even with the kids. And when I hear you speak about the passion, what the pleasure, what I think of is, for myself, how can I be guided by pleasure this weekend or this evening or this afternoon, rather than be guided by that internal dialogue or that internal slave driver that, you know, forever gives us a hard time, that we should be doing this and we should be doing that. So it's a nice thought to think about, guided by pleasure, not having time that's evaluated or judged or a performance or something to meet or something to strive for, would actually be a great form of giving myself some time to refresh and restore right now, which just seems vital to me.
I would really watch out for words like shoulds and musts and just catch yourself when you do think of those.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the internal critic, the internal slave driver, you know, the chimp, whatever we want to call it, the superego, is running riot a lot at the moment. And I think that for a lot of working parents, if they're not able to contribute at the same level as their colleagues, they can't be in the part of the anywhere, anytime club at the moment, because they're at home with kids as well as working. Then a sort of compare and despair can come in. And then the internal critic can say, well, you know, you must try harder, or they're going to be thinking badly of you, or they're going to be, you know, you're not going to get the promotion, or, you know, all the stuff to terrify ourselves. And there's an opportunity there to really think about that internal dialogue and how it can terrify us and hold us to account so often that we have to keep on pushing ourselves. Guided by pleasure and guided by self-care has a very different feel and quality to it. Yeah, that feels absolutely essential to me. Easy to say, hard to do, but essential.
I think it's a balance, isn't it?
Absolutely. So incredibly helpful. I'm really struck by not only your experience and knowledge in this area, but also that you're able to give such practical strategies for us all. And I really appreciate that. I wonder if you can leave us with your three top tips at this time on resilience for working parents.
So I have got, there are actually four top tips, but in terms of three, I call
even
them
better.
My three C's, my three C's. And basically they are connectedness. So the importance of staying connected to others and to yourself and to nature. Communication, you know, and we can't say that enough, but really thinking about even more active communication at the time. And the third is control, because actually, you know, we can't control everything. We are in an uncontrolled situation at some level, and that generates huge amounts of anxiety. So I'd say control what you can, but also be prepared to kind of not be in control of certain things and to see that as okay. It's part of the safety. And my fourth C, which I think goes across all of those, is compassion. And I think if you can be compassionate in your connection to yourself and to others, if you can be compassionate in your communication and be aware that, you know, we are all in this together, we're all scared and we all want to seek reassurance and move to something better. And we can also be compassionate about not having control over certain things and getting them wrong. Then that will be the best in terms of resilience.
Absolutely. We'll end on compassion, because I think that is a great place to end. So with huge compassion for all your experience and knowledge and for the time you've given us today, and Thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate you listening to The Working Parent today, and I hope this episode brought you some ideas and strategies around resilience that will have an immediate effect on your well-being. Dr. Kraus is an amazing person, so please head to her website, naharakraus.co.uk, where there are many more resources. She also has several apps. If you go to the App Store and search STEM 4, letter 4, then you'll see the apps that she has, both for adults around anxiety and fear and mood, and also for teenagers. So go and check those out there. And finally, Dr. Kraus is also running several Learn and Connect sessions for us at the moment at the Working Parent Company. You can find out more by going to our website or joining us on LinkedIn, where all those things are highlighted and talked about every day. So next time, I want to hop over to look at the whole area of mindset, and in particular, mindset for motivation and mindset for focus. So I hope you can join us then. Thanks so much for listening. And above all else, stay well, stay centered, and stay resourced. Have a great day.